Let's go straight back into the text and see what the Vaibhashikas assert in terms of the actual path to liberation from samsara. So we're on page 4 down towards the bottom, and what they're saying is the following. It is accepted that there are differences in the way in which persons of the three vehicles traverse the path. So here, when we talk about three vehicles, we're talking about these three vehicles here, sometimes called the three lineages, the three different types of disciple and how they follow the spiritual path. So the three are, in Sanskrit, the Shravaka vehicle. It's here translated as the hearer's vehicle. Then there's the Pratyeka Buddha vehicle, here translated as solitary realizer, and the Bodhisattva vehicle. These three vehicles are also often mentioned within a number of the modern-day Theravada Buddhist traditions. And how I think they're mentioned is a little bit different in these traditions. Here, when we talk about Shrava or hearer's vehicle, we're talking, in this context, we're talking about someone who hears the teachings and relies on the teacher. And similarly, and I think in the modern day Theravada traditions, someone who's following the Shravaka or hearer's vehicle is also relying on a teacher. In particular, they talk about relying on the teachings of the Buddha. The Pratyeka Buddha vehicle here is translated as solitary realizer, and the emphasis here is a type of person who is, particularly in their last life, not relying on a teacher to achieve the goal of liberation. So in this context here, both of these types of practitioner become liberated, become an arhat. An arhat is someone who has become liberated from samsara. In the Theravada traditions these days, this third vehicle often is not called the Bodhisattva vehicle, it's called the Samyaksambuddha. And Samyaksambuddha, Samyaksam here has the idea of fully awakened Buddha. And this, the way in the modern Theravada traditions that these are defined often is that the Shravaka, the hearer, is someone who relies on a Samyaksam Buddha for guidance. Whereas a Pratyeka Buddha is someone who does not need to rely on the Buddha, but is then unable to teach themselves when they achieve the goal. And a Samyaksam Buddha is like the solitary, is the Pratyeka, is like the Pratyeka Buddha in that they do not need to rely on anyone else, but they are also able to teach them when they achieve the goal. So this is how the three vehicles are often defined in Theravada. The Shravaka is someone who relies on a Samyaksam Buddha to achieve the goal. The Pratyeka Buddha is someone who does not need to rely on the Buddha, but is unable to teach because they don't have the same capacity. Whereas a Samyaksam Buddha also does not need to rely on anyone else, but then is able to teach. Whereas here, the three vehicles are a little bit different defined. Here, the Shravaka or hearer, very similar, relies on a teacher. The Pratyeka Buddha here is really talking about someone, particularly in their last life, who does not need to rely on a teacher. But both of these achieve a goal of nirvana, become an arhat, whereas the bodhisattva achieves the goal of enlightenment. So that's a little bit different. They're very similar, though. So here we're talking about these three vehicles, these three types of practitioner, and how they progress on the spiritual path. So let's have a look at what it's being said here in the Vaibhashika tenets. Down the bottom of page 4 it says, those of the hearer's lineage can join the view of realizing the person to be empty of being self-sufficient, substantially existent, with a small collection of merit, and having cultivated that for at least 3 lifetimes and so on, they attain a small enlightenment. So in all of these different ways of approaching the spiritual path, we often talk about the 2 collections of merit and wisdom. So merit, of course, is simply doing virtuous activities. And the wisdom here is, as we saw in the Vaibhashika, the wisdom we need to develop is realizing there's no self-sufficient, substantially existent self. That is the Vipassana practice that will enable us to achieve liberation from samsara. So here it said that a hearer realizes no self-sufficient self together with a small amount of merit together and achieves what's called small enlightenment. So within Vaibhashika, there's no real difference between nirvana and enlightenment. So in fact, for all these 3 vehicles, here we're using the term of achieving enlightenment. Here we see the word small enlightenment. If we go over onto the top of the next page, it says, those of solitary realizers lineage can join the view realizing the person to be empty of being self-sufficient, substantially existent, so the same wisdom, with middling collection of merit, meaning they do more merit than the hearers, and having collected that for at least 100 eons and so on, they attain a middling enlightenment. So because they've collected merit, more merit over a longer time, they achieve what's called middling enlightenment. And then bodhisattvas can join the view realizing person to be empty of self-sufficient, substantially existent, with a great collection of merit, and having cultivated that for at least 3 countless great eons and so on, they attain a great enlightenment. So here in the Vaibhashika, the wisdom is the same, the wisdom realizing no self, but it's the amount of merit that they create that attributes the difference. Also, there's a little bit difference with the bodhisattva we're going to see shortly as well. That's coming. Yeah, I haven't got that yet. Yeah, that's coming up. I'm going to tie that in to this, so don't worry. Well, just the amount and the amount of time. Well, it's any virtuous action. So merit is the result of virtue. So I think also in these philosophical systems, they talk about the normal types of virtuous actions of being ethical and generous and so forth. Yeah. And it says here, there are differences in the way in which they accumulate merit. So here's a little bit what's coming into what's called the 5 paths, which I'll explain very shortly. Bodhisattvas, having accumulated merit for at least 3 countless great eons, on the great stage of path of accumulation and below, actualize the heat stage of path of preparation through to the path of no more learning on one seat. So to understand what's being said there, we can look at the last handout called the Mahayana Path as a bit of a parallel. So this is not
exactly the same as what we're talking about here, but there are some similarities.
So this is the Mahayana path, which we're going to look at when we talk about Chittamatra and Majjhimika next week. But here on the path within Vaibhashika, the path to liberation, we can talk about these same five stages. We see on the Mahayana path, there are five stages there. Path of accumulation, path of preparation, path of seeing, path of meditation, path of no more learning. So here, we can break up the path in similar way. So we can also break up the path that these people are following in the same way. And here in particular, we're talking about those path of accumulation, preparation. So here, for the Bodhisattva, according to Vaibhashika, is that they say that they accumulate merit, meaning they're doing a lot of virtuous activities from this point and below on the spiritual path. So they're spending a long time, they said up to three countless great eons, doing merit or creating merit below the path of accumulation, the great stage of path of accumulation and below. So they're saying from this point on the spiritual path, up until this point, they spend a long time accumulating merit, and then they reach this point, and then they sit down in meditation and realize no self, and in one sitting, they go through all of this and achieve enlightenment in one sitting. Pretty good, huh? And this is how often in these philosophical traditions they say that Prince Siddhartha did this, that he, in the Bodhi tree, he was here, sat down, and did all this in one seat, in one session. So that's what's being said here. This is the Vaibhashika assertion. Yeah. And then it says, those of the solitary realizers lineage, having accumulated merit for at least 100 great eons on the great stage of path accumulation below, actualize the heat stage of path preparation through the path of normal and ones or see. So they do the same, according to Vaibhashika. The solitary realizers, the Pratika Buddha, accumulate merit here for up to 100 eons, and then sit down in meditation, realizing no self, and go through all these stages in one meditation session and achieve path of normal learning, achieve the state of enlightenment here. And then it says, those of the hearer's lineage accumulate merit on all four learning paths. So that's these. The four learning paths are path of accumulation, preparation, seeing, meditation. So those of the hearer's lineage then slowly progress along these four stages, accumulating merit as they go. That's right. It says here, and after having attained an Arya's path, they must also train on the learner's path for up to 14 lifetimes. So what that means is when they attain an Arya's path is here, path of seeing. Path of seeing means we have a direct realization, in this case, of no self. So when we realize selflessness directly, we become an Arya. So before this, up until this point, we are ordinary practitioner, an ordinary hearer, Pratikabuddha, or Bodhisattva. When we get to this point and realize, according to Vaibhashika, selflessness is a person, we become an Arya.
So what it's saying here is for a hearer,
we're moving slowly along this path, accumulating merit, and then when they get to this point where they have a direct realization of no self, then they become an Arya, and from that point, it says they take up to 14 lives to complete the rest of this. Correct. Yeah, good deal, huh? Let's go for that one. Just to add a few more things, and then I want to come back to this. It says here, there's now, because of this assertion, there's some consequences to what they're asserting here. And the first is that they say, they accept that a Buddha's form aggregate is not Buddha, because it is an object to be abandoned. This is so because it is included in the same lifetime as the bodily support of the earlier bodhisattva on the path of preparation. This is necessarily so because the bodily support of a bodhisattva on the path of preparation is an aggregate projected by previous karma and mental afflictions. So what they're saying is that the bodhisattva who gets to this point, at that point, they're still an ordinary bodhisattva. Their body, they still have mental afflictions, and their body is still a body that's produced through karma and mental afflictions. And then it sits down in that section and becomes Buddha. So it's still the same physical body. So they say that that body, because it's produced through karma and afflictions from back here, it's not Buddha. But they say here, I'll skip over one paragraph and I'll come back to it. If we skip one paragraph, it says, although Arya Buddhas have abandoned all suffering and its origins without exception, so remember, enlightened being or any of these who have achieved the goal have eliminated ignorance, mental afflictions and all suffering, it does not contradict that they still have true suffering in their continuum because their body was produced through karma and afflictions. This is so because abandoning every single affliction that observes true suffering is posited as abandoning true suffering. So they say that the Buddha has abandoned true suffering even though the body is still true suffering because it's the body they had here before they eliminated all the karma and mental afflictions. So it's a sort of an assertion of the Vaibhashikas. No, because the other systems don't accept this. The other philosophical systems don't accept that the bodhisattva from this point in one sitting becomes enlightened, meaning they progress slowly, which means by the time they get here and higher, their body is no longer true suffering because they eliminate the body, they eliminate the karma and the mental afflictions before they become enlightened. So even before they become enlightened, they have eliminated that, so their body is no longer true suffering. That's for the higher skills, but Vaibhashika don't accept that. Yeah, so this is what we'll see within the bodhisattva vehicle, is that within the, particularly in the Majjhimika, when we get to this point, we have eliminated those karmic imprints to be reborn through the power of karma afflictions, and we're reborn through the power of bodhicitta intention. Sure. Yes. If we go back one paragraph then, it says the Sambhogakaya, the complete enjoyment body, is not asserted, and it is accepted that at the time of nirvana without remainder of a supreme nirmanakaya, the continuum of awareness is severed. So there's a few things to talk about here. So when we talk about enlightened, a Buddha, we can talk about what's called the four kayas of an enlightened being. And often the word kaya is translated as body, but that can be misleading, because when we think body, we think this. So the four kayas are not this. So what we can talk about here is, for an enlightened being, we can talk about the body and the mind of an enlightened being. And so the mind of an enlightened being is called Dharmakaya. And the body of an enlightened being is called Rupakaya. Rupa is, in those five aggregates, the first one, form aggregate. So often Dharmakaya in English is translated as something like truth body or wisdom truth body, and this is form body. Now, the Rupakaya, or the physical aspect of an enlightened being, can be divided into two, meaning an enlightened being can appear in at least two levels. They can appear in a very subtle level called Sambhogakaya. That's what's being mentioned here. And they can also appear in what's called Nirmanakaya, a more coarse level of manifestation. So it's said, and again, of course, here Vaibhashika, don't accept this. Because within the Mahayana, within the Chittamatra and the Majjhimika philosophical system, they accept this. They say that an enlightened being can appear in a very subtle form called Sambhogakaya, which is only perceptible by Arya Bodhisattvas. Because an Arya Bodhisattva has refined their mind to a point where they can see a Sambhogakaya manifestation of an enlightened being. Whereas Vaibhashika would not accept that. And in terms of Nirmanakaya, is they're saying here that at the time of Nirvana without remainder, a supreme Nirmanakaya, and the Shakyamuni Buddha is considered to be a supreme Nirmanakaya because of the way in which he appeared as a Nirmanakaya, it says that that at the time of Nirvana without remainder of a supreme emanation, the continuum of awareness is severed. So this is something that is accepted, I think, within Vaibhashika and Sautrantika, is that when a bodhisattva, and we use the example of historical Shakyamuni Buddha, became enlightened as Shakyamuni Buddha, then we had that bodhisattva who has become enlightened, has eliminated the causes to be reborn, has eliminated the causes for the contaminated in body and mind which they previously had. So their assertion is that at the time of Nirvana without remainder, and here without remainder means at the time of that person passing beyond that life, this body collapsing and finishing, the time of Nirvana without remainder, which means without remainder of the contaminated aggregates, because they've gone beyond that. So their assertion is that at that time, and there would be at the time, for example, the historical Buddha at age 80 passed into what they call Parinirvana, their assertion is at that time that continuum of contaminated body and mind is finished. Sometimes here it talks about it's seven. Sometimes the analogy given is it's like a candle going out, extinguished. So for them, for Vaibhashika and Sautrantika, which we're looking at tomorrow, someone who has achieved this state of nirvana without remainder, meaning they've either become a Buddha or they've become an arhat, and then at the end of the life they pass beyond the continuum of awareness and the body is severed. There's nothing more. Finished. So for them, the historical Buddha, when he passed into parinirvana, has that historical Buddha, of course, is never appearing in any way after that. And if you ask these proponents, what is it then that remains? They say it's inexpressible. But certainly the contaminated body and mind is finished. Of course, the Chittamatra and Majjhimaka system, which we're going to look at next weekend, would not accept this. They would actually say it's illogical, this assertion. Because one of the tenets there is this idea of continuity of consciousness. So within the Chittamatra and Majjhimaka system, they would say at this point of nirvana without remainder, there's not a severing of the continuum. That the continuum, mental continuum, continues. So what they assert then, an enlightened being, there's a continuity of that continuum, and that an enlightened being, the mind of an enlightened being, Dhammakaya, can manifest in either of those two levels to help others. So within the Chittamatra Majjhimaka philosophical system, they would accept that the historical Buddha could be and may be appearing now in this world in either of these forms. Whereas within the Vaibhashika Sautrantika, they would say that's impossible. So that's what's being said here in this paragraph. Because the continuum, because the contaminated body and mind, there's no cause for it to... Correct. And just following on, the next paragraph relates to this as well. It says, from the point of having attained the state of an arhat, and so here we're talking about the first two, the hearer and the pratika Buddha, until they give up their compositional factor of life, hearer and solitary realized arhats are posited as being with remainder. So again, when someone becomes an arhat, gone beyond samsara, during that life they are in what's called nirvana with remainder, because they still have the remainder of the body and mind. Whereas from the point of view of having given up their compositional factor of life, i.e. passed beyond this life, they are posited as having passed beyond sorrow without remainder. So therefore, they also, in our heart, when they finish this life, they enter into what's called nirvana without remainder, like the Bodhisattva, the Buddha. So for them, the awareness of their continuum, the continuum of their awareness is severed. There's nothing more after that. And then there's another little technical point following that saying, although at the time of nirvana with remainder, they have abandoned the afflictive obscurations without exception. So here, of course, we're talking about the hearers and solitary realizer. So they've eliminated the conception of self-sufficient self and all the mental afflictions. They have not abandoned the non-afflictive obscurations. So remember, the non-afflictive obscurations is only abandoned by the bodhisattva due to their merit, accumulation of merit. So the both the hearer and solitary realizer haven't had enough merit to eliminate that. So they don't have this all-knowingness that a Buddha has. Although at the time of nirvana without remainder, the non-afflictive obscurations are not destroyed by the power of the antidote, they do not exist because at that time their support, the continuum of awareness, is severed. So it's a bit of a technical point that even for an arhat, when they have nirvana without remainder, then the non-afflictive obscurations
do not exist only because the awareness is not there anymore. So it's a bit of a technical point. I don't think we need to worry about it too much. So any questions about that nirvana with remainder, without remainder?
They have the virtuous part of the mind, which actually continues.
Right.
I mean, so that's just what I'm thinking about lower schools. They, of course, they believe that what's happening with the mind, that being, from a biological point of view, of the virtuous mind, does that also cease? Because they said that all the negative afflictions cease. But it almost seems like they only have negativities because they cease.
No, because remember, when someone becomes an arhat or Buddha, their mind is still there. So their mind doesn't cease just because they've got rid of their negative part of the mind, because they've abandoned the afflictive obscurations to become an arhat or Buddha. So in that the rest of that life, they still have a mind and body. But when that life finishes, there's no cause for them to be reborn again. Because the karma has been eliminated. And so because there's no cause to be reborn, they assert that the continuum of awareness and the body is severed because of that. And that's probably a reasoning that the Chittamatra Madhyamika system would use to try to refute this assertion. Probably.
It's just saying that there's no concept of individuality. So whether...
Yeah. So remember, when they say, when exactly the point is that they're saying that the continuum of that awareness and body is severed. But when they talk about that state following that, they say it's inexpressible. So we have to try to understand what their assertion is. And as John mentioned, is that basis for rebirth is no longer there. So then can we really talk about the body and the mind of an individual? Sorry? Yeah, but yeah, regardless of someone's motivation, that would not really affect what the result. It wouldn't mean that for someone who didn't have the motivation, their continuum is severed, and for someone who has the motivation, it's not severed. That doesn't make sense. So, because according to them, Shakyamuni Buddha, who has that motivation, when he passed into Parinirvana, the continuum was severed. So, again, we have to try and understand from their philosophical system what that means, really.
Severed is an extreme word. It is so transformed.
Yeah, but...
expressible.
You could say that.
When you say severed, it sounds like a very materialistic view of death.
But
he's not really saying that at all.
Well, what was previous is severed, is stopped. But the question is then what's left over? That's the question. So, of course, here in the Vaibhashika Satrantika, whether or not we achieve nirvana or become Buddha, become an arhat or Buddha, that's the final goal, finish. Whereas within the Mahayana, within the Chittamatra Majjhamika, of course, they have a different assertion, and they assert this. So also, as we're going to see in the Chittamatra Majjhamika system, they would say, a arhat who achieves nirvana without remainder at the end of this life, there's not the severing of the continuum of awareness, but rather they enter into a mental state and take on what's called a mental body, and then at some point they will manifest in the world again because they haven't actually achieved the final result. So that is the Chittamatra and Majjhamika assertion. And so they accept the existence of these, particularly the Sambhogakaya. Now one more point, and then I want to go into what John was asking about before. So just to finish off at the bottom of the page here, it says, when the proponents of things, so the proponents of things are this Vaibhashikas and Satrantikas, the proponents of truly existent external things, differentiate definitive and interpretive sutras, they differentiate them by means of whether or not they are suitable to be asserted literally. So each of the philosophical systems have different measures of what is a definitive and what is interpretive. And here, in these two schools, what is definitive is what can be asserted literally. So it says here, some among the two schools that propound objects do not accept the Mahayana scriptural collections of to be Buddha's word because most proponents of Vaibhashika assert that sutras are necessarily sutras of definitive meaning. Definitive meaning you can accept them literally. So of course the Mahayana sutras are saying something according to them, which is not cannot be accepted literally, so therefore they're not actually the word of the Buddha. So that is one of the assertions that most of the Vaibhashika is asserting or accepting. So now I'd like to go back for the rest of this afternoon. Yeah. Oh, sorry, yeah. We'll do that now. So we can, when we talk about the kayas of a Buddha, we can either talk about two, three, or four. When we talk about two kayas or two aspects of an enlightened being, we can talk about the Dharmakaya and the Rupakaya, the truth body and the form body, so the mind and body of a Buddha. And then the body, the Rupakaya, we can talk about these two levels of manifestation, Sambhogakaya, that can only be seen by Arya Bodhisattvas, and a Nimanakaya, which can be seen by an ordinary person. The Dharmakaya then can be also split into two. And when it's split into two, it's split into Svabhavakaya or Svabhavikakaya, and the Jhana Dharmakaya. And this often is translated as
nature body or nature truth body, and this is often translated as wisdom truth body. And I think the reason this split is sometimes done is the Svabhavikakaya is then identified as the emptiness of the mind of the Buddha. And this then is the mind of the Buddha. Just to really highlight, I think, that also an enlightened being's mind is empty of inherent existence. So, yeah. Well, no, I mean, the Vaibhashikas don't talk about any of this. In particular, they don't accept this because of their assertions. That's all that's been mentioned here. So, generally, you'll only see this kaya presentation in the Chittamatra or Majjhimika system. You won't even see these words, although they may talk about, I think, Nimanakaya, maybe, but I don't even think maybe they use that word. Right, so now... I think I've only really studied the four kayas in terms of Majjhimika, so I'm not sure what the Chittamatrans is. So they probably assert something similar.
So three.
Sorry?
Three kayas.
Only three. They leave it out. Oh, yeah, because this is the emptiness of the mind, which, of course, the Chittamatrans wouldn't assert. So, yeah, they probably would leave that out then. So let's now go back a bit and what John was referring to earlier, and that is we looked here in the Vaibhashika in terms of the path. We looked at it in terms of the five stages, the five paths, in particular because then we can relate this to the Chittamatra Majjhimika system, because this is the normal way of presenting within the Chittamatra Majjhimika system, the path to nirvana or enlightenment, is using these five path model. Whereas often in Vaibhashika Satrantika, and we see this in also in this tenet text within Vaibhashika, is presented another way of describing the stages. And so that's what I'd like to mention now. And another way of presenting the path here within particularly the Hira Shravaka type of person is we talk about the four results. And these four results are stages that we go through. And the first stage or the first result is called stream enterer. Sorry, so this is really talking mainly about the Shravaka, the most common type of disciple. So a stream enterer, if we equate that back to the five-stage model, the stream enterer is someone who has had a direct realization of selflessness. So here, someone who's entering the path of seeing becoming Arya is equivalent to stream enterer. And then the next step is what's called once returner. So a once returner is someone who will only come back once more within what's called the desire realm. And the desire realm is the realm that we exist in now. So humans, animals, and pratas and other beings all exist within desire realm. So a once returner is the next stage, is that someone who then will only return at most once again in the desire realm before achieving liberation. And then the next stage is called a non-returner or never returner. And that is someone who will not again return to the desire realm before achieving liberation. And then the last result, of course, is the result of becoming an arhat. In English, this is often translated as foe destroyer. So these are the four stages that we go through, and within this, then often the presentation is expanded, in that for each one of these, there is someone who is approaching that result and someone who's actually achieved the result, so-called abider. So for each of these, there is an approacher and an abider. Someone who's approaching becoming stream enterer and someone who's an actual stream enterer. Then they become an approacher for once returner and become a once returner. Then they become an approacher and abider. Approacher for flow destroying and abider. So then we talk about eight persons. These eight persons who are either approaching or abiding each of these four results. So that is how it's presented here very often within Vaibhashika Satrantika. Then, when you get the extensive presentation, we end up with what's called the 20 Sangha. And that is a sort of typical flavouring of the types of steps that we go through, because this is a very simple presentation of some steps, but within this, then depending on the type of practitioner, we can do different things. And we may take more lives, we may hear, we may end up in the form realm for a while. There's certain people who have sharp faculty, dull faculty. So within this, there are many variations about actually how we progress here. And so some of those typical variations are described in with what's called the 20 Sangha. So that's a list of 20 of the steps that are possible that various different practitioners may or may not go through. But they're all within this range here. No. No. Yeah. Right. Right. Probably. And when we look particularly in this once returner, non-returner, there are a number of variations in terms of passing beyond in this life, passing beyond in the next life, or migrating into the form realm and then jumping around in the form realm for some lives and so forth. So there are many variations in here. If we get some time tomorrow, I may give a little short explanation of the 20 Sangha to give a bit of a flavour. Because there's a number of different presentations of the 20 Sangha, and they each one of them look a little bit different, but have a lot of commonality. So if we get time tomorrow, I'll give a little bit of a flavour for some of these 20 Sangha.
because I did study it many years ago. Yeah. No. Generally in the Chittimatra and the Majjhimika, when they talk about the Mahayana path, you'll see this presentation, the five paths. You won't really see this. Although when I studied Abhisamlamakara, which of course is talking about the Bodhisattva path, then in that text they talked about Bodhisattvas using this Hira 20 Sangha and trying to draw some parallels with Bodhisattvas who have similar stages. So they tried to do a little bit of a parallel there, you know, sort of just to show that there maybe was some sort of correlation. But in general, in the Chittimatra Majjhimika system, as we see with this Mahayana path chart, generally we'll only see this presentation of the five paths.
Going beyond, as you said, the grip cessation at the end, if it's the same for the three classes of practitioner
in the Vaibhashika,
yeah,
the nirvana without remainder,
it's all the same.
Well, sort of, kind of.
Well, there's the small, middling, great, but they're indescribable.
Well, the continuum, there's the. Once we achieve nirvana without remainder, then they're all in the same state. We can't even say they because there's no they.
But there is something smaller, something middling, something greater.
No.
So why would anyone go for the countless eon version instead of the 17 lifetime version?
Good question. I mean, again, according to Majjhimika and Chittimatra, this doesn't happen. This is not the way it happens.
But why would the Vaibhashika say that some people would follow these other paths? Is it simply they got confused and didn't realize there was a short way of doing this?
Perhaps one of the things, and this is something actually I'll just mention now before we finish up today, is that the arhat in Vaibhashika, they talk about six types of arhat. And according to them, five of them can fall back into samsara. Which, from a higher philosophical system, would mean there never were an arhat to begin with. So maybe they only spent a few lifetimes and got into a state that seemed to be like an arhat, but they didn't really achieve that goal. So that is certainly in the Vaibhashika, and we find that in this tenet system here, and that's generally an assertion in Vaibhashika. They talk about these six types of arhat. The five bottom ones fall back into samsara. It's only the sixth one that doesn't. Of course, even Sautrantika would say, no, we don't accept that. I mean, obviously they have some coherent or semi-coherent reason why they assert that. I don't know the reason. Sure. Well, they say they're arhats, the Vaibhashikas. They assert these five arhats, so. I don't know. Any last questions before we finish up today? Sure. Sure.
Is that something that was already in Indian culture?
There was already, what?
In Indian culture before Buddhism, or is it something that's
No, I mean, or even, I mean, at the time pre-Buddha, there are traditions that talked about rebirth, liberation. This was, I think, fairly common even pre-Buddha. So it's not something that only the Buddha started talking about.
Do we need to believe it or accept it or question it?
Yeah. Of course, I think that particularly when we go into the Mahayana philosophical systems and we're talking about helping to liberate everyone from samsara, it doesn't really make much sense to talk like that if we think at the end of this life, that's it, it's finished. But again, you know, and some people claim to have past life memories. So for them, it's a manifest phenomena. It's something they have this mental direct perception of. So for them, it's not even in question. But of course, if we haven't had that, then how to know about that? Then my own sort of personal opinion about that is that even though we can't maybe now validate that through our own personal experience, if that idea is something that inspires us and helps us to lead a better life, then I see no problem. And if that's the case, and we lead a better life, more virtuous life, and we try and apply this wisdom and so forth, and then there is rebirth, we've done the best thing. If there's no rebirth, we've done the best thing because we've led a good life. So it's a win-win situation from my perspective.
It's a working hypothesis.
Exactly. And there are many things that are working hypotheses, of course. And I think it could be a useful working hypothesis. If you find no use in it, then put it aside and work on what you find helpful. And then at some point you'll find out. One way or another. Okay. Any last question? Otherwise, we'll finish up there. Yeah, last question. But also with that, particularly in traditions such as the Mahamudra and Dzogchen tradition, we can have a completely different perspective of that. But that's for another time. Yeah, but they remember the Vaibhashikas are not saying we become nothing. They're not saying that. Sorry? So we have to be clear that Vaibhashika is not saying that our body and mind become nothing. Severing the continuum. They assert the continuum of the contaminated aggregates is severed. The contaminated body and mind is severed. Inexpressible. They don't talk about it. They say it's inexpressible. They don't say we become nothing. Well, they say we will never manifest again in the world, yes. Well, again, we can't even talk about we because there's no we. There's no me at that point. So to even say I won't manifest again is not their assertion, because there's no I anymore to discuss whether or not I manifest. Something like that. Okay, let's leave it there. And again, let's, before we run away, just dedicate the positive potential that we've gathered here today together. And initially then, of course, we can dedicate it based on our motivation this morning. So maybe we can spend a short minute or two doing that. And then we're going to read out this Shanti Deva dedication prayer together. So if you have that handy as well. But first, just spend a minute or so doing your own personal dedication of all the merit that we've accumulated here today together. Let's read out this dedication prayer from Shanti Deva, great Indian master, together. May all beings everywhere, plagued by sufferings of body and mind, obtain an ocean of happiness and joy by virtue of my merits. May no living creature suffer, commit evil, or ever fall ill. May no one be afraid or belittled with a mind weighed down by depression. May the blind see forms and the deaf hear sounds. May those whose bodies are worn with toil be restored on finding repose. May the naked find clothing, the hungry find food. May the thirsty find water and delicious drinks. May the poor find wealth, those weak with sorrow find joy. May the forlorn find hope, constant happiness and prosperity. May there be timely rains and bountiful harvests. May all medicines be effective and wholesome prayers bear fruit. May all who are sick and ill quickly be freed from their ailments. Whatever diseases there are in the world, may they never occur again. May the frightened cease to be afraid and those bound be freed. May the powerless find power and may people think of benefiting each other. For as long as space remains, for as long as sentient beings remain, until then may I too remain to dispel the miseries of the world. Thank you. Have a nice evening. See you at 10 o'clock tomorrow. We'll have a look at the Sartrantikas.